Catholic girl, love the mass. I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Trying to feel something. I came back home, I won't let go. So much more for me to know. I read the Tao of Physics and all those quantum mystics. Something did feel right. The arguments were all that tight, and all those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo.
Daughter Five. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Excuse me. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are a lot of atheist songs, and you'll be hearing them right here on this program. Tonight we have a special guest with us. Kevin Scott is a member of the Atheist Society of Knoxville, and I don't know if they're rationalists or not.
It's probably.
Okay.
I like to think I'm rational.
No, I mean, are you a member of the rationalists? And he'll be talking to us about his deconversion from Christianity. Would you like to start now, or do you just tell us about a little bit about yourself to get started?
Yeah, I grew up in the Midwest. Went to a Bible college and majored in Bible and did that whole thing. I was intending to not necessarily be a pastor, but just to somehow do some kind of ministry. Mm-hmm. And I did. Over about 18 years, I helped plant a number of churches in southeastern Kentucky, well, northeastern and southeastern Kentucky, and then one in Memphis. And through a long process, kind of came out of that and have been an atheist for about 8 or 10 years, something like that.
Well, one of the first things that I hear from Christians or believers when I tell them that I'm an atheist, excuse me, they just assume that I don't know anything about about Christianity. They say, obviously you haven't heard the word or you would be a Christian. Can you speak to that?
One of the things that I run into, in fact, I ran into it even in the last week, are people who make the assumption that I must have been hurt by the church.
I get that a lot, too.
Yeah, it's not because I came to any rational decision to not believe in the supernatural. It's because somebody hurt my feelings. And
or your mother died, or you lost somebody
to something. Sickness. Yeah, and I blamed God. Mm-hmm. That's really not where I come from. That's really not my origin story. And that's probably not the origin story for most people mm-hmm. that I've met who do not have faith.
Well, have you read the Bible?
I've read the Bible a few times. Mm-hmm. When I was 17, there was a cute girl that I liked. Well, I don't know that we were at that point yet.
Girls, they'll get you every time.
She was cute, and I was talking to her on the phone. Back in that time period, they didn't have cell phones, so I was on the house phone. And she said, "Well, tell me about your daily devotional time." I hadn't even heard of that, so I played played like I did.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I asked some Christian friends, what's a daily devotional time? They said, well, that's where you read the Bible and you pray and do that kind of thing. So I started when I was 17. I started reading through the Bible every year. And I did that until I was probably, well into my 40s. So I've read through the Bible a number of times. Of course, in college, I had to read through the Bible a few times.
30 times or so?
I say 30, yeah. Yeah.
On average, how long did it take you each time?
Oh, well, I just read for... Reading through the Bible is actually a pretty simple thing to do if you read a few chapters a day. Mm-hmm. It's about 1,200 chapters. So if you read 3 or 4 chapters a day, you'll get through the Bible in a year pretty easily.
Mm. Okay. So that's not an excuse. You have pretty good knowledge of the Bible.
I do. And I even have some knowledge about, or I used to, I don't know how up I am on it, but I used to have a good deal of knowledge about archaeology and biblical criticism and things like that because of my college background.
Yeah. What about your religious childhood? How was that? What was that like?
I grew up in a moral United Methodist home. My parents are still United Methodists and wonderful people. I had an exceptional upbringing. We went to church and were active in the church. We were the ones who would come early and set up the chairs for a thing, and then when the potluck was over or whatever, we were the ones who were the last ones to leave.
How many siblings did you have?
I have one sister.
Okay, so we're 4 of you.
Yes.
Coming to do that. Is that how you became a Christian? You just, from your earliest memories, you were always in church?
I had a conversion experience. I think if someone had said to me when I was 10 or 11 years old, are you a Christian? I certainly would have said yes. I started telling people that I wanted to be a pastor when I was 9. But I had a conversion experience. I did what a lot of teens do. There was a camp, a summer camp, and I went to New York. Okay, I'll get a little closer to the mic. Okay. There was a summer camp, and I would go there every summer. It was in southern Indiana. It's a beautiful, wooded area. Uh-huh. And the Methodists had a few camps down there. And I would go every year, but one year when I was about 13, and I don't know if I was 12 or 13 simply because my birthday is in June, so I don't remember whether it was before or after my birthday, but yeah. I was 12 or 13. And they were giving an altar call. And people who are familiar with, certainly conservative religions do that now. I mean, a lot of the Baptist churches and so on still do an altar call. They were doing an altar call, and it was very emotional. And I decided, yes, I want to give my life to Jesus Christ. And that was my conversion experience.
Well, you said it was like a religious experience. Can you talk to that? I mean, how magical was it for you? What did you interpret it as?
Well, I interpreted it as something beyond simply mental ascent. I believed that something happened to me spiritually. And so while it was an emotional experience, and there were many people who were having the same emotional experience, and I'd even observed that in years previous when I'd go to church camps or whatever. But the idea that I needed to be forgiven for my sins and that I needed to accept Jesus Christ on a level that I hadn't before. And I believed at that time that it was certainly a life-changing experience, as much as you can have at 12 or 13.
Okay. But you're not a believer now.
No.
What do you do about your sin now?
I
did ask that tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
I'd like you to go there.
Yeah, I think it was a long process for me to leave Christianity. It wasn't simply one day I got up and said, you know what, I don't believe anymore. I went through a long period of time. But one of the things that happened was that I began to give up guilt and shame. That didn't happen while I was in the church, but it did happen while I still had faith.
Do you think it could have happened while you were in the church, or did they guilt and shame you for anything that they found out about?
No. I mean, our church was very odd. The last church that we helped start, actually, technically, we didn't help start it. There were 12 people there when we started attending that church, and there were about 150 by the, 6 or 7 years later when I left. But in terms of guilt and shame, that wasn't a huge issue there. But if one reads the Bible consistently, there are a lot of passages, or a number of passages, and say a lot, there are a number of passages that talk about thought crime as sin, that talk about a lot of things that seem, well, seems fairly easy for normal humanity to trip you up. And so that was difficult to simply walk away from that. And like most people who grew up in a good household with parents who said, you know, you need to sit up straight and use good manners and keep your elbows off the table and so on, there was also that part of that was Christianity too. It was, if we're good people, this is what we will do. We'll not be unkind. We will not be cross. We didn't say shut up in my household. That was as bad as cussing. And so there were a lot of times I got caught being bad as a child, and I think that probably flavored my life up to that point. That was reinforced by my Bible reading, Bible study, you know, those kinds of things.
But at the same time, being bad as a child and being human as a child, you do things that you shouldn't have done, but you live and you learn and you try to end up being a good person. Let's say that there's somebody out there listening now who's experiencing this guilt and shame, and they don't know what to do about it. What advice would you give them?
Cognitive behavioral therapy. that's really, I mean,
that's a mouthful. Would you?
Yeah. So
go into that.
So here is the thing. For me, it was relatively easy because of my age and my maturity level when I left the church for me to make the transition from, wait a minute, I don't need to feel guilt and shame. There are times when those feelings are appropriate, but those should be rare in an adult.
Well, one thing about Christianity per se is that they have you apologizing for being human from your earliest memories. I mean, if you're human, you're bad. You're born in sin, and you've got to ask forgiveness every single day of your life for the things that you would do as a normal human being.
And I'm not sure how many Christians today really take that level of seriousness into their faith. I did, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
But in terms of getting over that, though, cognitive behavioral therapy is simply a therapy where you identify the thoughts that are behind the emotions you're feeling and work through whether those thoughts are accurate. And if those thoughts are accurate, if those thoughts are true, then so what? So what do you do with that? The basic premise is that in a person who's not mentally ill, somebody who doesn't have some kind of physiological dysfunction, that our thoughts drive our emotions. And so if there's not an underlying physical cause, if we can correct the thoughts, then we can correct the emotions.
So basically, if you're suffering from an awful lot of angst from the guilt and sin type of thing, you should try to seek therapy of one type or another.
Or do it yourself. There's a couple different ways to do that. We all carry around some baggage. There's a couple online tools.
And one of the ways you wouldn't want to do it is to find a Christian therapist. Because many times they're not trained in therapy or psychology. They're just appointed as a therapist for the group.
Right. And even some who are accredited may have. I indirectly but very personally experienced a Christian counselor who decided to. She was working with my wife at the time, and she decided to blame everything on demons.
Right.
And so where she had been a very well-respected counselor before that, a therapist before that, when she began doing demonology and began doing exorcisms as part of therapy, she ended up doing a tremendous amount of damage to her clients. So,
yeah, a lot of people don't know that the other book that King James wrote, have you heard of it?
I don't know.
It's called Demonology.
Oh, okay.
So he wrote the Holy Bible, had it translated, but he literally wrote Demonology. Yeah. Get on Google and look it up.
I need to. Yeah. I should have prepared for this.
Oh,
I could have studied.
Yeah. We're talking with a special guest, Kevin Scott. He's an ex-preacher in the Independent Church.
Right. What I will say now will only mean something to like two people, but But there were, back in the early 1800s, there was a tremendous revival, and some independent churches grew out of that, and they kind of broke off into three groups. You have the Church of Christ Non-Instrumental, you have the Disciples of Christ, which is a denomination, and it's fairly, most people say it's kind of liberal. I don't want to put that label on them. If you're a person who's a Disciples of Christ person and you don't see it as liberal, that's fine. I don't care. And then
some people see it that way.
Yeah, but then there's the independent Christian churches, which are loosely affiliated. They have some Bible colleges, and so they maintain some of that. But they don't have any. They don't own property. They don't have any denominational structure. And I was part of the third group.
Okay. So what made you decide to go to Bible college?
When I was in high school, my intention was to do something with computers, probably computer engineering. And as I pondered more, and I was a very black and white thinker then, I wasn't a very pleasant person. I know that's hard for you to believe, Larry. But
yes, it is.
I wasn't a very pleasant person. And so in my mind, if our lives are, you know, 70, 80, 90, 100 years, that's infinitesimal compared to eternity. And so in my mind at that time, I was saying, you know, the only thing that really matters is how you're preparing for eternity. And that was the guiding principle of my life. So it seems strange to me that people didn't go to Bible college. Mm-hmm. My friends who went into engineering and stuff, it just didn't make sense to me.
It's a logical conclusion from a Christian belief that your eternal soul is at risk. And if learning about God is the thing that will get you there, why do anything else? I mean, this is a basic Christian theme.
Well, but for me, it was beyond. I wasn't worried about my soul. I was worried about your soul. Mm. And in my mind, doing some kind of ministry, and I ended up mostly doing music ministry, mm-hmm. but doing some kind of ministry mm-hmm. would help other people get to heaven. That was my goal. And so that's what we worked on. And when we were in southeastern Kentucky, we worked with the real outcasts of society. Southeastern Kentucky is very poor. And so it had all the problems of drug use and problems of poverty, but it also had things like prostitution. And so we worked with all those kinds of people because in the Bible we saw Jesus doing that. So that's what we did.
Sure. That's great. Let's take just a little break right now and talk about the couple of the free thought groups here in Knoxville. You're a member of the Atheist Society of Knoxville.
I do. And Tuesday nights we hang out and have a good time.
Right. We meet at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria every Tuesday night for happy hour and dinner. If you like to bring your family, we've got many kids and families that have come down there now. It's a family-friendly place. It does allow alcohol, but it doesn't allow smoking, except out on the deck. So if you'd like to come down, even if you feel like you're not an atheist, but you're willing to talk about it and hold a rational conversation, respectful, with your fellow man, come down and this is the kind of things we talk about. That's the Atheist Society of Knoxville every Tuesday evening at Barley's. And then there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee that meet the first and third Sunday at Pellissippi State. The easiest way to find out how and where and when is to go to the website. It's rationalist.org. Go there, look at their calendar, and you'll be able to get directions and find out more about their presentations. Where the atheists get together and have dinner and chat every week, the rationalists usually get together for a presentation and discussion. It's very educational, very edifying. Come down and check it out. Okay, getting back to our discussion here, how Christian were you? I'm sure there are people that say, you know, if you're an atheist, you never were really a Christian.
Well, there's a passage in Hebrews that kind of says that. In Hebrews, I think it's Hebrews 6, 4 through 6, but I don't have it in front of me, so if somebody wants to pull their Bible out, you can probably find that. But the idea is if they had faith in the first place, they wouldn't have left. Here's the reality. My whole life was about the church and about helping people find a more intimate relationship with God as I understood him from the Bible. That meant that I raised a family on very, very little money. There were many times when we gave away the last of what we had in order for somebody else to be whole, because we felt like, well, God knows our needs. He has our back. He'll take care of us. So even though that was the money we had set aside to pay our electric bill will get paid somehow.
God will do it.
God will take care of it. Yeah.
You just push it out of your mind for the time being.
Right. Right. So I didn't, in terms of my faith, I sometimes hear atheists talk about how Christian pastors, Christian ministers are all, you know, crooked people. They're all out for themselves. And that has not been my experience in knowing hundreds of pastors.
It's easy if all you see are like televangelists.
Right.
It's easy to get that opinion. And you certainly do get that opinion from them. But I understand that there are very sincere individuals out there that are trying to save your soul.
And that make great sacrifices at times to do that. We do have a professional clergy now. Mm-hmm. In the United States, we have a professional clergy. I wasn't thinking the atheists have a professional clergy. I meant in the Western world, we have a professional clergy. Mm-hmm. And so you can have a career as a clergyman and have all of the things that you would have if you had a career as a, you know, whatever. But there are a lot of pastors who go to areas where it is difficult for them to make a living and so on. I'm sorry that they've made those choices, because having come out of that and realizing that I didn't save for retirement because that money went back into the kingdom. I didn't do some of the things that most people do simply because I didn't think that was important based on my reading and understanding of the scripture. That wasn't important. So now I have a lot of makeup to do.
Right. Well, did you always have doubts when you're a Christian?
I don't know that I ever doubted God until I got out of the church. And that's probably a story worth telling, is how I got out of the church. I was working at a church, and my wife at the time became seriously ill. That went on for several years. And over that period of time, I had to put more and more time into taking care of her, doing those things, and I couldn't do some of the things in the church that I was doing and take care of her. And I had two young men that I was raising at the time, so my sons. So what happened with that was I said, you know, I can't continue to do the stuff at the church that I'm doing, so I stepped down from the things I was doing at the church. We still attended the church, or I did, my kids did. But the church made it fairly clear that if I still continued to go to the church, that it made the people who were doing the things that I was doing, made them very uncomfortable. And I understood that. So I started going to a different church. As my ex-wife began to be healthier, she would come to church with me on occasion at the new church. But it was because she was struggling with mental illness. It was made very apparent that she really wasn't welcome, and that created a lot of tension. So at that point, I had the opportunity to go lead worship at a kind of a campsite for a summer. And so I did that with a friend of mine. He did the preaching and I did the music, and then really decided after that that it was easier just to worship at home and not yeah. you know.
So when you switched thing. Churches, did you switch like denominations or?
Yes, actually, I did.
How would that work? I always figured that if I was a member of a church and part of a sect, that they would think that other churches weren't Christian.
There are those who think that way. That's for sure.
That you wouldn't be able to go to heaven if you went to another church. But you say you quit the church and went to another one. Was it the same? You say it was a different type of church?
Right. I went from an independent church to Southern Baptist church. Mm-hmm. I respected the pastor and had known him for several years. So I thought, you know, this is a good church for me to go to. Joined that church. The differences between denominations, there certainly are hardline people who say, well, the Baptists go to heaven, but the Methodists don't. The Methodists go to heaven, but the Catholics don't.
Oh, heck, there are Baptists that say other sects of
Baptists yeah.
don't go to church, yeah. Don't go to heaven.
Yeah.
So that's what I was asking about.
In my understanding, we had much more in common than we had differences. Well, no, not just with the Baptists, but in Christianity. I was never big on that.
It differed a little bit from the church that you were actually leaving. You were more encompassing in your beliefs and who would go to heaven.
I think that most churches today that would consider themselves evangelical would be more inclusive. That might not hold true for Protestants and Catholics. I think there are a lot of evangelical Protestants who think the Catholics are, but I can't speak for them.
Well, is that where your real doubts started then when you changed church?
No, what happened to me was I started writing back in the early 90s, and I wrote for Christianity Today, and I wrote for a number of Christian periodicals. And so in the process of doing that, I met a lot of evangelical leaders. I was fortunate in that to get to meet them. When I got out of the church, I had more time. And so one of the things that happened was I began to have time to study things I was interested in. I was always interested in science, and I wanted to look at some science things.
Uh-oh.
Well, I just hadn't had time to look at them myself. So I began to – I actually started hanging out on forums where actual scientists hung out, and I would ask questions, and they would tell me things. And what I found was some of the evangelical leaders who were – well respected, the things that they taught were taken as gospel. I look at it as when you go to the doctor and he says that mole isn't cancerous, you go, good, whew, that's great. You don't necessarily assume that he doesn't know what he's talking about because he's the guy. The evangelical leaders that I talked to, they were the guys. And when they said this is the way that it is.
They set doctrine.
Not just doctrine, but science. They would say, well, you know, intelligent design is a great example. Intelligent design has a strong, they would say, has a strong scientific basis. And we're doing peer-reviewed papers all the time, so you can trust that. People like Michael Behe did that back in the 90s. Well, when I started hanging out with actual scientists who did things like evolutionary biology, anthropology, paleontology, I could ask them questions, and what I found was that, no, the things that I was being told, people even like Ken Ham was still a big, and he still is, but he was a big influencer in evangelicalism then. Mm-hmm. And so as I got that information, I realized that either these evangelical leaders were dishonest or they were incompetent in the areas they claimed to have expertise in.
Right. And they would say, and from my own experience, I've heard them say that they had peer review.
Right,
articles,
right.
But they have created their own peer review firms,
journals
that would peer review quote unquote the articles that they wrote, and then they could say that it's almost like a diploma mill.
Right. Yeah. So when I realized that, I began to look at other things that I had taken experts' words on, and found that there were many things that I had accepted both from way back when I was in Bible college up till present day.
And that's the one, that's what really started you doubting it?
It started me questioning the Bible as a reliable document. It also caused me to start questioning other people's opinions on those things. So from there, I kind of... It was not instant. It was a long period of time. But you need to do a little check-in?
I will. Go ahead.
Okay. What happened from there was I began then to see that I had gotten where I'd gotten to in my life based on a life philosophy that I gained from Christianity. So I went from being a Christian to saying, well, this was a good philosophy. It may not be the only valid spiritual philosophy, but I'd had what I considered to be spiritual experiences that were valuable. And so I continued to have faith for a long period and eventually got to where I just believed that there's a God. And then eventually I got to where I said, you know what, I don't have any supernatural beliefs at all.
Yeah. Well, I'd certainly like to ask you about that. We're going to take a short break, play a song. This is WOZOLP radio station, FM 103.9. We're broadcasting from Knoxville, Tennessee. You can listen to us streaming online at WOZORadio.com. And this is a song that I've listened to quite a bunch this year. It's First Aid Kit doing hard believer.
So you ask for my opinion. Well, what is there to say? To be honest and just foolish won't make you wanna stay. You gotta go on and get moving. I can't do that for you. Got so many plans and so much you wanna do. Love is tough, time is rough. Love is tough, time is rough. Rough on me. Well, I see you. Imagery. Well, I don't need your eternity or your meaning to feel free. I just live because I love to, and that's enough, you see. So come preach about morality, that's just human sense to me. Love is tough, time is rough. Love is tough, time is rough. Rough on me, on me, on me.
Special guest tonight is Kevin Scott. He's an ex-preacher. He's an atheist now. We were going to be taking some phone calls. Phone number here is 333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. We welcome your phone calls. The lines are open. So, when and how did you actually stop believing? I heard about how you started having doubts. But, I mean, you're an atheist now. You
right.
call yourself an atheist.
Right. What happened was over a long period of time, literally years. And it was not something that was sudden or overnight, even when it happened. I gradually found less and less reasons to believe in anything supernatural. And because I tried to be intellectually honest with myself, as I investigated more, and I would go to these scientific forums, and I would say, well, you know, I had this experience. This seems like this was an answer to prayer. This seems like, you know, and I've been journaling since I was 17. So there were times when I would write something in my journal in the morning that I was praying about, and then it would happen that night. And I didn't really understand, or I couldn't process the idea of confirmation bias in regards to those things. Mm-hmm. And so over a period of time, I gave up more and more of my supernatural beliefs, finally coming to the place where I really couldn't find any reason to believe in the supernatural. So I can't point to a day, but it was a gradual process. Now, I will say this. It was a traumatic process. People ask me often, well, are you happier now? Well, I'm happy now.
Right.
When I was a Christian, I got to do everything I wanted to do every day. Everything that I valued, I got to do every day. That was very difficult to walk away from, and walk away from all of my social connections, all, you know, everything. So it was a very difficult time.
Can you tell me a little more about that? How did your family react, your close friends?
I had several pastors who I was close friends with. They kind of went on that journey with me. They didn't agree with that. They knew that I had left the church. I didn't leave faith immediately. They understood why I left the church. But over the course of time, they eventually, you know, understood that I was an atheist, and I don't know that I'm
sincere about it.
Yeah, and they appreciate who I am. So I'm still very good friends with several pastors. They don't agree, but they don't argue with me. They don't give me a hard time.
Did you make a big announcement like Dan Barker did? Did you send out letters or anything like that?
No, it wasn't. For many reasons, that wasn't something that I would have done. I don't dissuade people. I don't try to be evangelistic about atheism. It was a difficult, life-wrenching transition for me. There are people who don't think that that's okay, that we should all, as atheists, we should be doing everything we can to wrench faith out of people's hands, and I'm not one of those people. At the same time, I try to live honestly, and so I don't hide it, per se.
Be a good example.
Yeah.
Live by example. Not live by your faith, but live by example of a good non-faith.
Well, and my parents are probably a great example. My parents know that I'm an atheist. I don't remember a time. Well, I take that back. Now that I think about it, I do remember a time when that was actually discussed, and my mom said to me, well, yeah, we kind of knew. But one of the things that I do with my mom is my mom will say, well, you know, we prayed about this thing, and the tornado hit a different place. It didn't hit us.
Yeah.
And I would say, well, Mom, do you think those people were praying too? Maybe that's not why the tornado went to where it went to or whatever. And over the years, she's actually become very circumspect about how she views things like prayer and stuff, partially because she knows that I'll probably say something. My sister is still a Christian, and we're very close. She is about as close to being out of the church as she can be. She has gotten to a place in her life where she believes that the church as a building and as an organization is not good for her. And so we can discuss anything, and she's pretty open to hear what I have to say. And we don't, I don't really have problems with anybody. My kids are, my kids would probably not call themselves atheists, but they're not people of faith. And so, I mean, the whole thing was, I didn't have a lot of fallout. I own my own business, and because I'm in the South, I don't, you know, I don't put...
you don't wear the red A.
I don't put Richard Dawkins in the corner of my website to say, yes, you know, the atheist shop here.
Right.
But I try to, you know, I try to deal with each human as they come and try to love and respect and be kind.
Well, you must be totally miserable now, or as an atheist, I mean. I hear all the time from Christians.
It was difficult. It wasn't as difficult as some things, but there were some points at which I was unhappier. Now, I mean, some of the things that I enjoy about not having faith are things that people of faith probably would find surprising. One of them is, I'm glad I'm not immortal. I really like the idea that I have a life, and at some point it's going to end, and my atoms will go be a part of the universe wherever they end up a part of the universe.
I wrote an article one time, and in it I said, can you imagine at the end of like 100 million years, when you've mastered every instrument, you've learned every composition to perfection, you've talked to every composer, and that's just music. In 100 million years or 200 million years, you could do literally everything you've ever wanted to do and repeatedly. But the thing about it is, most of the tales that we hear about heaven is you praise God. I mean, that's what you do in heaven. You praise God. And heck, if you get fidgety after a year in church, I mean, an hour in church, can imagine a year, 2 years, 100 million years, 3,000 billion years, and then that's just the beginning? There's two points here. It's not a reward, it's a punishment. And two, the reward is for God, because everybody who dies and goes to heaven is there to praise him. That's his reward. Anyway, I'm getting off on a soapbox.
I've considered all of that. I don't know what individuals' view of heaven is. The Bible is not, in my understanding of the Bible, I don't know that we ever get a clear picture, and we get different pictures in different places.
Very sketchy.
But in terms of one of the things that I believed, and I said this earlier, was the idea of this life is really short, and then we spend eternity in heaven, so we should be spending our time here, you know, getting ready for that. But some of the parables in the Bible, some of the recollections, I guess I would call it, in the Bible that were presented as genuine stories, as historical stories, give you the impression that one of the things is, when you get to heaven, there is going to be judgment, and there's going to be, you know, a winnowing of the sheep and the goats. I mean, Matthew 18 talks about that. And by the way, anybody who's listening, if I get the scripture verses chapters wrong, you can tell Larry next week.
Or you can call in now.
You can call in now.
5937.
So that idea of, okay, I've got to do everything right here. I got to do to the best of my ability. I got to spend all my energy, because Jesus, though he was rich, he became poor, that for our sakes. That we could become rich. You know, that idea that I should be spending all of my time, all of my life, all of my energy for eternity, that's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. If you take that seriously, that's a lot of pressure. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that I don't have that pressure.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read a book one time. It was a short story about this. The guy said, imagine if you died and went to hell, and you'd been in hell for 5 years. And then one day the devil said, okay, I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to let you go back. Or let's say it was God. God gave you this chance. It's not a character for the devil to do this. Say, I'm going to let you go back to earth for a year, and then I'm going to bring you back here. Let's say that you went back to earth. What would be the one thing that you would do while you were here on earth? You would preach to people not to go to hell.
Right.
I mean, it would be the one thing that you would go door to door and not even eat, not even sleep.
Right.
Because it would be so horrible. But the general run-of-the-mill Christian out there who says they believe in hell and eternal torture, and, you know, they can have friends who are atheists and friends who are Buddhists and friends who are Muslim. They say, yeah, they'll be going to hell, you know, but, you know, what can you do? No, they would be knocking on their doors and talking to them nonstop if they truly believed that was what was going to happen to them.
I think there's a level of humanity that goes along with faith. And in my looking at the way that the church functions in the West today, the Christian church functions in the West today, the idea is that we can't be too extreme, or nobody would go. Nobody would go to church. They would all reject it. So what we find is every generation has its own brand of Christianity, and it tends to fit with whatever's socially acceptable for that group. That's probably always been true.
Yeah, that just means that the general beliefs of the group are the ones supported by the group.
Correct.
Or at least the actions. That gets us over to morals. How can you be moral without being, without believing in the Bible and the moral sponsored by the Bible?
I think one of the things that atheists miss about a lot of Christians, especially if the atheist didn't grow up in church, from a very young age, we are taught in the church that we don't do certain things, rape, murder, pillage, lie, cheat.
But that's also taught in the general society.
No, well, let me finish though. So we're taught these things, and we're taught not to do these things, but the reason we're taught not to do those things, and we're also taught not to have bad thoughts, not to have, you know, all of these things have the same foundation. The foundation is God says not to. So eating pork, shellfish, same as murder,
homosexuality.
Saul was rejected as king over Israel simply because he didn't commit genocide when he was told to. So when you look at those, when you look at those things, oh, well, pleasing God is why we don't do these things. So when a Christian looks at an atheist many times, I think they look and go, I know why I don't do those things because God says not to. If I gave up God, why wouldn't I do those things? Well, we know as humans, there are things that we won't do.
Empathy and compassion for your fellow
human. Right. Yeah. So, but that doesn't occur to a lot of Christians when they start considering moral issues. They don't assume that atheists or you know, different types of religion, you know, Muslims right now, you know, a Muslim is not more likely to kill you than a Christian. You know, historically, we have a lot of Christians killing people, innocent people. But we, in our country that is mostly Christian, mostly identifies as Christian, they look at a Muslim and say, well, they don't have my God, so they can't, you know, they can't have that morality. Well, of course they can, because as human beings, we have empathy, we have kindness, we have all of those things.
The golden rule, I mean, and Jesus wasn't the first person to say, don't do unto others what you wouldn't have them do unto you. There was Confucius said that about 500 years earlier, and it's been handed down through the ages well before and after Jesus. It's just human empathy and compassion. And if you've got to have some particular rule for not doing something to your neighbor, just consider harm. You don't want to do harm, either physically, emotionally, financially, to anyone. And if you follow that rule, you'll come up pretty well. You certainly won't end your days in jail. Okay, so have you tried to deconvert other people? I mean,
I have been available to talk to anyone who is having questions about why I left faith, why, if they have questions about the Bible and how the Bible fits with their experience. I do talk occasionally about evolutionary biology. I'm not an expert in that by any means, but it was important to me to go through the process that I went through. So if I see someone, I don't try to deconvert people, but if someone asks me, you know, 1 Peter says this in the Bible, be ready to give a defense for anybody who asks you the reason for the hope that you have. Well, if somebody asks me, and we recently had somebody ask me, I gave my phone number, my email address, because it was the kindness of people who didn't have faith and their willingness to accept that I had some ideas that were malformed, that weren't logical or that weren't scientifically correct or whatever. I had these ideas that were inside me. Their willingness to be kind and generous with their time and generous with their lives allowed me to deconvert as painlessly as possible. I deconverted. Nobody convinced me to do that.
That was me. I had a person to talk to, a girl I met when I was in my freshman year in college, who was an atheist. But she basically just answered my questions and then gave me a bunch of new questions that I couldn't answer. It started me down the path, but it was a path I had to walk myself. Have you heard about the Clergy Project?
I have. You're more up on that than I am, though, but I have heard about it, yeah.
The Clergy Project is an organization set up by Daniel Dennett and Dan Barker from the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Dan Dennett's a philosopher. Anyway, they set up this organization for people who are still currently preaching but no longer believe. They're atheists in the pulpit. However, as atheists in the pulpit, they face some very challenging life problems. Excuse me. And that if they came out of the atheist closet and told people that they were atheists, they would, one, lose their job, probably lose many friends. They might lose their spouse.
Lose their home in many cases.
In many cases, the divorce would cost them the home. It's very serious problems for people who no longer believe but are in the pulpit. And if I understand correctly, there's about 400 preachers in this organization right now going through it. There are several that have come through it. Can't think of any names offhand. Of course, I'm terrible with names, and I'm 65 now, so the names go away. But anyway, look up Google Clergy Project, and it will tell you more about it. And if you're interested in applying for it, then it'll give you the contact information. Okay, so you're not really actively trying to deconvert others, but you're available.
I am.
And as am I, happy to. But I'm not coming from a background of the clergy.
Right.
So I wouldn't have that much in common with them. What do you wish more atheists understood about Christians and evangelical preachers, pastors?
When I hear atheists talk to Christians, and I hear atheists talk, especially when they talk to pastors or Christian leaders of some kind, atheists, in my experience, and I'm not putting this on any individual, but atheists in my experience tend to focus on things like science or things like, you know, oh, well, the Bible says this, that can't be true. You know, the Bible has a talking snake. The Bible has a talking donkey. The Bible says that the circumference of a circle is 3, or that, you know, that pi is 3.
You must marry your rapist.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. I mean, it says, and they focus on that kind of thing. What I think a lot of atheists fail to understand is most of us, certainly when I was in ministry, I didn't really care about that stuff. Here's why. We are taught, both as Christians and certainly as pastors, you're taught from a very young age or in college, you know, there are things in the Bible that are hard to understand, but scholars have already looked into those things and have found there's not really a basis for that. There's really not the problems there. So we don't spend a lot of time looking at the Bible and going, oh, that's a contradiction, because we kind of assume it's not a new book. It's been around for a while. So somebody's looked at that. Because it doesn't have a whole lot of bearing on what you do in ministry and what you do in life as a Christian. So the kinds of things that atheists typically address are just not there, or we as Christians assumed that...
Or we're told. I mean, you were told
right.
that these had explanations.
Yeah, it's all explained.
And again, the preacher or pastor will invoke faith.
Right.
You know, whenever they get pushed against the wall, it's, you know, you must have faith, my child. And faith pretty much stops you from asking the questions.
But those questions don't ever come up in church. I think that's the thing. Atheists bring up things to Christians that Christians really don't care about. It would be better, in my opinion, for atheists who want to talk to somebody about their faith, is just not. Just be a genuinely good human being. Mm-hmm. Be their friend. Care about them. If they go through a crisis of faith and they have doubts, maybe they'll come talk to you because you're kind and loving and caring.
I follow the at my job. I'm an out atheist. Everybody knows I'm an atheist. And my job, I never bring up religion. Excuse me. If somebody else brings it up, I'll give my opinion, but I will never preach at them. You know what I consider atheism. It's my turn rule. You know, if you want to talk about your religion, then give me equal time. You know, I'll talk about mine. But what kills me is that, you know, they talk about their religion and then they tell you to shut up, which is we've run into that in more than one case, but it hasn't happened to this particular job, and I hope it doesn't. But anyway, that's my rule.
I wouldn't even care about that. I feel as if I'm kind and loving and caring as a human being, and I'm imperfect in that, obviously. But if I can be kind and loving and caring to everyone I meet, if I treat people with respect, then hopefully they will find me a person they want in their life. Mm-hmm. And if they do come to a place where there is a crisis of faith for them and they want to talk to me about my journey, I'm happy to do that.
Do you plan to write a book?
I've written a few, but not on this.
Do you plan to write a book on this?
No, I don't imagine that I will write a book on this. I'm in the process of working on a new book that is designed to help people find greater levels of happiness and fulfillment in their life, but it's not going to focus on atheism.
I've noticed that you've come to our group pretty frequently, and you're also going to, I'll plug their group, what's that group in Maryville? Pub Theology.
Oh, Pub Theology?
Yeah,
I think it's
Theology.
Funny, the only time that I went there with you, we were the only two that argued. With each other. We argued with each other.
So not all atheists are in agreement on all subjects, for sure. But if you're interested in coming out to another group, that's Pub Theology of Maryville. It's in Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria on the second Monday at 6:30 on the second Monday, Pub Theology of Maryville.
Which Barley's, I think is the 10th, is it the 10th?
Barley's Tap Room
this
and Pizzeria.
This next month or the 11th? I guess it's the 11th.
Yeah. This month, I guess, or January would be the 11th. That's about it. What I was going to say was, would you recommend other people coming down to the group?
Oh, certainly, yeah. Tuesday nights are fun. We, even if you're not, don't identify as an atheist per se, if you want to find out what atheists are like when they're in the wild, that can be a good thing. We have a good time. And then in the Pub Theology, I've only gotten to go once, but it's actually a gathering of people of various faiths. And we have a topic to talk about, and we'll have good discussion. And it's discussion. I was kidding Larry about arguing with him. We didn't really argue. I don't think any of the stuff that I've been to, I've seen anybody really arguing.
We do have a couple of young earth creationists that have been coming to the meetup lately. I've not been down on that end of the table very much lately, but I think that there might have been an argument or two coming out, but nothing heated. Anyway, it's been a wonderful hour. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for
having me,
Larry.
Any closing remarks or any thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Oh, wow. Just be good people. I don't care whether you're a Christian, a non-Christian, an atheist, whatever you call yourself.
And you know what good is. You don't have to go to a book to find out what it is.
Right, right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That was Kevin Scott from the Independent Churches of America.
Independent Christian Churches, yeah.
And I'm going to sign off tonight with a song by Anthony David called God Said. We'll see you next week.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people might not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. Mm. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal.
Ever since, they have been cursed. Oh, shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks through me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me.